We are live and we're local. This is a Juno afternoon. Today is Thursday, June 29th. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, filling in for Joan Pardis. On today's show, we've got the UAS Corner. Dave Klein is here to talk about the PE classes and the facilities offerings for students and alumni members. Marcia Squires will be here to talk about the 4th of July parade, and Sue Baxter will share details with us about our sister city relationship with the town of Whitehorse. And we'll get the latest art news and arts up, those interviews, national native news, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Looking at weather for the rest of today, periods of rain, highs around 60, and tonight, rain likely, lows around 50. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Demonstrators erected a large teepee on the grounds of the Parliament building in Ottawa Thursday morning. They say they want to raise awareness about Native issues. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
A Native singer with drums in the background highlighted the protest as about 80 Indigenous rights activists brought their concerns to Ottawa ahead of the celebrations this weekend to mark Canada's 150th birthday. The protesters say they will pray and fast for the next 4 days in front of the Canadian Parliament, which they insist is on Algonquin land. Carrying wooden poles on their shoulders, they try to enter the gates of the Parliament grounds on Wednesday evening. They were stopped by security and police, and that led to an hours-long standoff. When it was over, one person was dragged away by police, 10 were arrested and later released. But the teepee was erected just inside the gates. Here's one of the organizers.
So what we're doing here is we're taking a stance just to simply educate and create awareness around this issue of like celebrating Canada Day and how it is deeply impacting Indigenous people.
The giant teepee is now just inside the gates of the Parliament grounds. Police have erected barricades to prevent protesters from moving farther inside. Hundreds of thousands of people are expected in Ottawa this weekend for the 150th birthday celebrations. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
This week, Blackfeet tribal members rejected a measure to reform their constitution. Nikki Ouellette of Montana Public Radio reports.
The proposed reform constitution would have drastically revamped the structure of the tribe's government by establishing a three-branch system with built-in checks and balances. But that change was rejected by tribal members. Instead, the tribe will retain its current 9-member single-branch governing body, called the Tribal Business Council, which has been in place for the past 82 years. Dawn Gray is a Blackfeet tribal member who led an opposition group to the proposed reform. She supports changing the tribe's constitution, but says this version did not offer enough opportunities for public involvement.
So I would really like to see the Blackfeet Tribal Business Council sit down with everybody at a meeting and say, okay, let's outline a constitutional convention process and where do we begin?
She says the tribe is in a good position to begin that process now and build on what people have learned.
So that we can get to change, but we want that driven by the people and not a political agenda.
Tribal Business Council member Joe McKay, who led the failed reform effort, could not be reached for comment. Slightly less than 3,000 of the more than 13,000 eligible tribal members voted in Tuesday's secretarial election. The final vote tally was 1,279 in favor, with 1,644 opposed. The vote comes a year after the Tribal Business Council voted 8-1 in favor of the proposal. Supporters said the new structure would have addressed failures in the current single-branch system and protected tribal members from government corruption. Opponents said the measure would have concentrated too much power in the president's position and feared the proposed language could have opened up tribal membership enrollment. I'm Nikki Ouellette.
President Trump says he looks forward to government-to-government consultation with tribal leaders on issues important to Indian country. He made the comment during a White House Energy Roundtable in Washington, D.C. Wednesday, which included tribal, state, and local leaders. Trump says under his administration, it will be easier for tribes to use their resources, saying they've been taken out of their hands due to federal government restrictions. The Trump administration has already lifted a number of restrictions, including on coal. Among those at the meeting were representatives from tribes in Colorado and North Dakota, which currently develop oil and gas. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Community Builders STEAM and Cultural Conference for Native Youth by the New Mexico Indian Affairs Department and Los Alamos National Labs at Santa Fe Community College, July 20th to the 22nd. Support by Sundance Consulting at 505-867-0946. The third National Gathering of American Indian Veterans celebrating all U.S. military takes place July 21st through the 23rd in Wheaton, Illinois. Information by calling Trickster Art Gallery at 847-301-2090. Proud to support this program. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and here with me is my first guest, Dave Klein, from here for the UAS Corner. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Is it Dave or David? I'm sorry, I tripped up on that.
Either one.
And tell us, what's your connection to the University of Alaska Southeast?
It's a strong one. I've been there for 20 years. During those 20 years, started off as kind of a student employee, working in activities and student government. I worked within the housing environment as a living group advisor, web design for 10 years, and have been now back at Campus Recreation for 2 years.
And what is your title?
Associate Director of Campus Recreation. Primary focus is on the facility, but there's also, because of our great environment, there's so many opportunities for outdoor recreation, and that's always been an interest of mine. I've kind of blended that naturally into the recreation center.
Oh, how nice for you. That's great. Sounds like a great job. Sounds
it's
like
awesome.
Fun anyway.
Yeah, I love it.
And today you're here to talk to us about PE classes at the university. Tell me, did you enjoy gym class as a youth?
I did. You know, probably the first introduction to gym class was junior high. And back then you had the shower factor. so I think that made everybody a little bit nervous. But now, as an adult, I certainly do. Because I think, you know, keeping yourself fit and active is super important. I'd say for a student, it's vital. A lot of studies have been done on the importance of maintaining, health, but also maintaining these connections. And you can do that through recreation. You can do it through different opportunities on campus, student government clubs. So it's super important, particularly students who are coming from afar, that they don't separate themselves and just go to classes, go back to their where they live, whether that's on or off campus. Going out and meeting people and trying new things is so important to the campus experience and to them being successful.
Okay, great. Well, tell us some more about these classes and why we should not be scared.
Sure. there's a variety of things that, you know, the PE nomenclature, you typically think of yoga, power pump, dance, and we offer all of those. And they vary by semester and maybe perhaps who's teaching. We have several different PE instructors, and a lot of them, some of them are in private facilities perhaps during certain parts of the year, and they come out to the university and they may teach, you know, a good yoga class in the fall. In the summer, things kind of slim down. We kind of do different operations during the summer. But in the fall and spring, for this fall, we have kind of the general health and fitness PE class. We have core conditioning, just to go over a couple. Indoor cycling, spinning, very popular.
These are kind of similar to the classes you might take at an athletic center.
Sure, yep.
Group classes, group
sure.
fitness style.
Yeah, the classes at UAS, sometimes they're restricted by the equipment, like spinning. You know, you only have so many spinning bikes. But also, it's also a safety thing. You know, the classes are limited. Our instructors are very hands-on, demonstrating, and they spend a lot of time going around and coaching one-on-one, perfecting perhaps form. We have some great instructors, been doing it a long time, total professionals, really good at what they do. I haven't seen this before. We have a sitting meditation class. Do you want to be less stressful? Is in the title, who doesn't want to be? weight training. We have a couple different versions of yoga. We have a Latin dance class. I think that's usually in the evenings. And then we have some also in the PE area. We have a program called Outdoor Studies, and they typically reserve, I think it's half the class size. A lot of classes are about 12 students. Six are for those who are in the either the certificate or the bachelor's program for outdoor studies. But a portion of that class is reserved for people that are taking PE credits that aren't necessarily in that program. And some of the things that they do in the fall, for instance, an introduction to rock climbing. There's lots of areas to climb rock here around town. They typically start out in the facility because we do have an indoor climbing gym. And they go, they cover things in basic safety and knot tying, belaying. So they usually spend about 2-3 weeks, or about 2 weeks inside, and then they transition outside. We have an introduction to fly fishing, although that's not typically done in the rec center.
No, I was going to say that one must at least mostly take
You'll see
outside.
Them out on the lawns around around UAS practicing
casting.
Their casts. Introduction to sea kayaking. And they have a backcountry navigation class, which certainly is important in our environment, is knowing how to navigate.
Those sound fantastic. And what is that like for someone who's not enrolled at UAS as a student but wants to take one or maybe more than one of those classes?
Sure, that's always an option. That's, you know, part of our mission. Certainly part of the focus is having, you know, these degree programs, but most classes, some might have some prerequisites, but almost any class, particularly PE and ODS, the ones I'm most familiar with, there's nothing stopping a person from just wanting to take, you know, a credit or two or with an interest that they might have.
Do you teach any of the classes yourself?
I don't.
Have you taken any of the classes yourself?
Over the years, like I said, I've been at UAS for 20 years. I have taken years ago, I took some career ed courses down close to where you're at. New homeowner, wanted to learn kind of some basic wiring, kind of understand my home a little bit better. You know, when you buy a home, you don't have an owner's manual. And so for me, that was something that really benefited me, was be able to take a class and just have a better understanding of who to contact, and just to have a better awareness about my home. The ODS classes, I love the outdoors.
ODS stands for Outdoor Studies.
Yeah. Just returned from the Chilkoot myself the last few days, you know, what a fabulous experience. A lot of the classes that I would probably take in ODS conflict with my own schedules, and but I have time. I don't plan on leaving anytime soon. I love my job, and so there's always that opportunity. That's one of the benefits of being an employee at the university. Issue, you can take classes, and you're just paying the fees. That's kind of a little hidden bonus.
That's nice. Speaking of fees and also maybe time commitment, can you tell me, like, I'm not enrolled at UAS, but if I want to take this class, what's the time commitment and is it affordable?
Yeah, you know, it really varies. Classes go anywhere from 1 credit to 3 credit. You know, the 3 credit courses, since you're getting, you know, more credit for them, there's more of a time commitment. And so they may meet on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday for an hour and a half, whereas a 1 credit could be like a 1 day a week sort of arrangement. They all vary. If you go to our website, uas.alaska.edu, it's very easy to find the schedule. And if you can tailor it down to PE courses or whatever your interests are, and then you can find out all that kind of information of what it costs for fees.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of fees, when you're taking 1 credit or more at the university, you're automatically a member at the rec center. So you don't have to be 6 or more credits or a full-time student. If you're taking like 1 PE class and you've got 1 credit and it's Juno-based, then you have access to the rec center during our open hours, where you can go in outside of your actual class.
And the rec center is where you'd go to take a class like yoga or Latin dance, is that correct?
Correct.
And you have other resources there too, treadmills and things like that?
Yeah, and we have all the traditional stuff that you'd think of, the cardio equipment, the free weights, a suspended running track. We have an indoor climbing facility. We have an activities area, kind of studio space, where largely the Student Activities Board, which is a group of students who kind of select entertainment, a lot of times that's the venue for that. And then we also have a lot of rental equipment, outdoor rental equipment, that's available to members. We have a lot of lake craft, stand-up paddle boards, kayaks. We have backpacks, stoves, a lot of equipment that students come up don't necessarily have, or they just don't have the space to bring. We have really good affordable rental rates on all that equipment, stuff that's kind of can be pretty tough to find in town unless you purchase it. There's not a lot of rental opportunities in town.
No, that's great. That's very cool that you guys offer that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of students would really appreciate having access to that.
They do.
So the facility itself, you were starting to describe it to me a little bit in the pre-interview. It sounds like it's pretty impressive.
It is. It's very unique. It's a joint facility. 12 years ago, we had a facility in Ock Bay. It was a great step up from what we had before. And then opportunity came along where we had some property near the university, but we didn't necessarily have the funding for the facility itself. And we did a partnership with the National Guard, who was moving out of downtown. They had the money for building the facility. And so it's a joint facility, largely upstairs. There's office space for the Army National Guard. So that's another part of our membership is active duty military. And then occasionally, about once a month, we close on the weekend for their actual use of they have sole use of the building. But it's a great relationship to have. We wouldn't have a facility that we have for the campus size that we are. So we're super lucky that we have this wonderful facility. I have students from the past who come back, friends of mine, and they're just shocked and just like, oh, I wish we had this when we were students.
Yeah, it sounds really, really nice. So thank you for telling us all about that and about the classes and anything. Do you have a favorite sport or outdoor activity that you really enjoy? You mentioned hiking.
You know, one of those things with living where we do, you get a great day. And you're almost sort of like, where do I go with this? You know, there's so many opportunities. Personally, I love kayaking. Kayaking, hiking, camping are probably my things I enjoy most. I love being on the water. And I like being able to see that excitement, especially with students and introducing those things to them for the first time. And so for me personally, it's a nice blend of my interests and being able to share those and seeing the impacts they have on students who, in some cases, have never been exposed to those things. But, yeah, it's always a dilemma for me when there's a beautiful day. And, during those rainy days, you need to get out. And so that's something we always stress is that, you got to have the right clothing for it. But, don't hibernate. You need to recreate. That's kind of a little slogan.
That is a great motto. I'm going to keep that one in mind. Well, thanks for being here, and thanks for your time. We can go to the website. What is it again to find more information?
UAS.alaska.edu.
Great. And is registration open soon for the next round of classes?
It's all open, yeah.
All open? And when do the next classes start?
I'm going to look at this first one here that I have listed, and it looks like August 30th for health and fitness. You have things that start at different times.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So we should just go look at the website and see what works for us, huh?
Yep.
All right. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
I've got a television, it's filling me with home. I've got a television, it's filling me with home. Wherever I end up, wherever I roam. I've got a television, it's filling me with home. I've got a phone, it beeps, makes me know I'm not alone. I've got a phone, it beeps, makes me know I'm not alone. Wherever I end up, I sleep like a stone. Yeah, I've got a phone, it beeps, makes me know I'm not alone. Thank you. in circles, no. Yeah, all around the party we stand in circles, no. Oh, can I find you? Who knows where I come from? All around the party we stand in circles, no. I had a death before, now I don't know where it's gone. I had a death before, now I don't know where it's gone. Oh, how did I get here? Did I say when I was young? I had a death before, now I don't know where it's gone. I got a television spinning the phone. I got a television spinning the phone. Wherever I end up, wherever I roam, I got a television spinning the phone. Right, oh, young, kinda hurt, don't you wanna get some?
In 1916, no one knew the booming town of Treadwell, home to the largest gold mine in the world, was on the brink of its ultimate destruction. In one momentous year, infrastructure crumbles, fires rage, and war looms. Young engineer George Barnett arrives in the territory of Alaska with guts and genius, not expecting to fall in love or carry the safety of the miners and the town on his shoulders. See the earth-shattering new play, Treadwell Gold, at Perseverance Theater, June 22nd through July 3rd. Tickets at The Jack, Hearthside Books, ptalaska.org, and 463-TIXS.
Support comes from the Copper Whale Inn in downtown Anchorage. Near business, arts, events, and more, with breakfast served daily. Reservations and information at copperwhale.com. The Copper Whale Inn, a gem in downtown Anchorage.
It is about 24 minutes after the hour. You're tuned into a Juno afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are Marcia Squires and Sue Baxter. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're here to talk to us about the Juno-White Horse sister city relationship. And now, I'm an only child, so I've never had a sister. Do Juno and White Horse get into a lot of, like, arguments and embarrass each other and stuff?
A little bit. We get into that back and forth just a bit.
I'm totally expecting you to say no.
No, actually, there's a we've partnered with the hockey, the JDH hockey, and
cool.
They have a Rainforest Classic hockey tournament every year in February. And before that actual tournament, we have invited the White Horse team to play against the Juno team. And that, I think, is more of a playful
rivalry.
Yeah,
yes.
A playful.
We have a trophy that goes back and forth. Right now it's in Juno.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. We'll try our best to hold on to that. So give us a little bit, let's just start off with a little bit of history about the Sister City program.
Absolutely. Well, Sister Cities was actually started by Eisenhower in the 1950s, and it's actually an international organization. The whole purpose is to create relationships between two international cities, and these cities are striving for and try to develop bonds of friendship, understanding while promoting international awareness, things like that. We have started in here in Juneau in the 80s, 1988, and we have partnerships that are long-standing, short-standing, but it's for mutual benefit for each of those cities, and we hope that they're actively viable. These relationships include exchanges of culture through events and activities, student exchange or business or municipal cooperation, things like that. And Juneau, we have like 3 or 4 or 5 different cities. Yeah.
That we're sisters with?
Yes.
Wow. Our closest relationship, though, is with White Horse Canada.
And what are both of your connections to the Sister City Program or Committee?
We are on the advisory committee to the assembly and to the mayor.
Okay.
And we serve at the pleasure of the mayor, and we support Juneau's relationships with our sister city. So we're the worker bees that make things happen.
And there's 7 of us on the committee. Mm-hmm. So, and we would love to have more people if they're interested, if anyone's interested in or has connections with any of our sister cities. We'd love to have guests come to our meetings. We meet once a month. Or if they want to march in the parade this 4th of July.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that in a second. So each member of the committee acts as sort of a liaison with a different sister city, or is this all for White Horse?
We have a committee that works multifacets. So it is not some sister cities committees are set up that way, that they have a particular person to handle a relationship with a particular city. We tend to all work on whatever the what's on the fire at the time.
Mm-hmm.
With some people more focused on one city or another. Our other sister cities are Calibo in the state of Aklan, Philippines, Vladivostok, Russia, Mishan City in China, and Chai in Taiwan.
Have you been to any of those?
I've been to Vladivostok.
Really? Oh, that's fascinating. Well, that's a story for another interview, I think. And I just wanted to ask, how do sister cities benefit each other's communities? What does it mean to be in a sister city relationship?
Well, it's for us, it's a little bit different with each of our sister cities. As I said, the White Horse connection is strong. We have sent delegates there. At some points, our assemblies have actually gone en masse and met with their council. Our mayors connect with each other. We have gone, representatives from the Sister Cities Committee went to celebrate White Horse's birthday incorporation a couple of years ago. There are connections with the university. Students from our sister cities get in-state tuition at UAS.
Really?
That's a very big deal.
They can come and use the rec center that our first guest
right.
was talking about.
Yeah, basically it's trying to get a better understanding of other cultures, really, and a more awareness of each city, but in a little bit of a different way, rather than just visiting a city and coming back and doing an educational program. This is kind of a long-standing relationship that we have, and it can be trying to get to understand policies of a city or the structure or the needs. Again, I keep saying that we want this to be mutually beneficial to each city because it can get one-sided, and we are striving to do that. And with White Horse, it seems to be working very well. I do want to reiterate that Sue said that, yes, students can come to UAS and get the resident tuition. That's a fabulous benefits. We have a big community here of Filipinos, and hoping they'll take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So
let's talk about the big thing on the horizon, 4th of July, and what does that mean for the sister cities?
Well, the first piece is that it's Canada Day in 2 days, and the Honor Guard from Juneau Police Department is going to march in the Canada Day Parade in White Horse.
Wow. What day is that again?
Saturday.
Saturday?
The first.
That's Canada Day. Yeah. Yes. First of July.
It's a big deal, this Canada Day, because it's the sesquicentennial, 150 years old, for when Canada's first four provinces got together and said, we're going to be a nation. Then they subsequently added six or seven more. And but this is like their July 4th anniversary as we celebrate 1776.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very big deal for them.
Absolutely. And then on the 4th of July, the Mounties, RCMP, our Royal Canadian Mounted Police, are coming with a delegation to march in our parade, along with Mayor Curtis from Whitehorse.
Oh, that's so exciting. Wow.
And this is the third year in a row. They've come many different years, but this is our third year in a row that that they have been able to come with a delegation. And you'll see them resplendent in their dress uniforms.
Will they be on horseback?
No.
Oh, no. That's okay, though. Cool uniforms are entertaining enough.
Well, that's one of the things, the reason that I corrected myself with Mounties.
Right.
Because
they won't actually be mounted.
They are considered, they consider themselves RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted, still isn't it there, but they're not mounted.
That's true, but the RCMP doesn't quite have the name recognition. So
you're right.
It's good to clarify.
And Juno in the past has been so welcoming to this delegation. Last year, the members of the Sisters City Committee marched with the RCMP, and there was a whole section of the crowd that just broke spontaneously into O Canada. And they thought that was just wonderful.
We hope that happens again. Hint, hint to anyone out there.
If you're listening, brush up on the way.
Yes.
Well, that's fantastic. That just sounds like so much fun. So will they be sticking around after the parade? Are there any other events or ceremonies planned?
They will go over to Douglas. They don't have time to march in the parade, but they will be in the town of Douglas after the Juno Parade, just before the Douglas Parade starts, because they have to they fly over in their plane, and then they have to head back. Juno Police Department is very supportive in transporting them around Juno while they're here.
And they catch a ride with JPD when JPD is on its way back.
They do. Actually, I don't know. They're flying. The RCMP are flying, and I believe the ferries work so that JDP is driving back.
That's good, because we need them back in time for our parade.
Yes.
But that's what sisters do, right? They share. So is there anything else you wanted to mention about the parade or the Sister City program or anything else about the upcoming events?
Well, we have seven members.
We meet once a month.
Yep. You said you're open to new members.
Love to have new members. And if you're interested in participating or if you want to come as a guest to one of our meetings, you would need to get a hold of Lori Sika with the city and find out you could get on a waiting list to become a committee member.
Yes.
And also you can come and check out any of our meetings at any time to see what we're talking about. And if we need some more worker bees, we'd love to have people coming and joining us.
Yeah, it sounds like there's plenty of work to go around and plenty to do as we maintain these relationships with our sister cities. And how long have both of you served on the committee?
I started out as the UAS liaison, and Sue twisted my arm a little bit.
Oh, Sue.
Actually, I really got really interested and enjoy the people that I'm working with, and I love the purpose of this committee, and said, yes, I'd love to be on the committee when asked. So I've been with the committee for 2 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Probably 4 or 5 years attending meetings.
I can't, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm in the middle of my third term on the committee.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for being here today. That was wonderful. Great information. And
we'll see you at the parade.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I don't think I've missed a single one ever since I lived here.
Great.
All right. We're going to take a little break.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. Thank you for being here. Take a little break. We'll be right back with more Juno Afternoon.
Just one night, all we got. Just one night, all we got. Just one night, all we got. Just one night, all we got.
I ain't got time for you. you, baby. Either you're mine or you're not. Make up your mind, sweet baby. Right here, right now is all we got. A little party never killed nobody. So we gon' dance until we drop. A little party never killed nobody. Right here, right now is all we got. Skeetin' bada pop.
Almanac for Thursday, the 29th of June, 2017. 1956, on this day, President Eisenhower signed the Federal Highway Act, which established the interstate highway system. During World War II, he'd been impressed by the Autobahn system in Germany, decided the United States needed something comparable. It turned out to be the largest public works project in American history. The first coast-to-coast interstate was I-80, completed in 1986, running from New York City to San Francisco. It's the birthday of the writer Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, born in Lyon, France, in 1900, renowned pilot, best known today for his classic children's book, The Little Prince, about a little boy who lives on a planet so small he can watch the sun set 44 times a day. Saint-Exupéry grew up in a castle with a coterie of aunts and cousins and sisters and nurses. The family was aristocratic but impoverished. He became a pilot in the French Air Force. He helped establish airmail routes over Northwest Africa, the South Atlantic, South America, crashed numerous times, and despite all of the injuries, he continued to fly. 1935, trying to win a big prize by setting a new speed record from Paris to Saigon, he and his mechanic crashed in the Sahara Desert. Wandered for 4 days. He used some of that experience in writing his book, The Little Prince. 1944, Saint-Exupéry flew a reconnaissance mission over France and never returned, crashed in the Mediterranean, not far from Provence. It was on this day in 1613, the Globe Theatre burned to the ground in London. The thatched roof caught on fire after a cannon misfired during a production of Henry VIII. It was rebuilt in 1614 and was in use until 1642, when the Puritans closed all the theaters and the building was pulled down. A replica was built in the 1990s and is still operating. It's the birthday of the man who wrote Guys and Dolls, Frank Lesser, composer, lyricist, born in New York City in 1910. Also wrote the first big hit song of World War II, Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. Here's a poem for today by Ann Iverson, Waves and Wet Kisses. I had only seen my parents kiss twice. The first time after my father's ear surgery, I was 7 or so, don't recall the nature of the kiss, but only that his hearing was bad from his youthful years of lifeguarding. Or was it after he tore the cartilage around his ribs from lifting heavy glass bottles of milk? I don't recall. The second time was after my mother's mastectomy. They rolled her out of recovery. She looked sad without her glasses, eyes small and watery. He bent over and touched his lips to hers, then turned away and shook his head. So, that is it. That is all. Two small kisses for me to coast on like a wave. Ann Iverson's poem Waves and Wet Kisses from her collection Mouth of Summer, published by Kelsey Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Home Advisor, matching homeowners with background-checked professionals for home projects from minor repairs to major remodels. See homeowner reviews, compare prices, and book appointments at homeadvisor.com. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices. Subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Juno's Waterfront Restaurants, presenting Fish Fest, Monday, July 3rd, 9 p.m. at two locations downtown, the Twisted Fish and the newly opened Waterfront Beer Garden, Pier 49. Live music, fireworks, and more. Online at twistedfishcompany.com.
This is Bird Note. Listen for a moment to this remarkable drumming of a ruffed grouse. The resulting percussion, produced by a rapid beating of the wings, is a vivid example of a non-vocal or instrumental bird sound. Birds communicate with a fascinating array of instrumental sounds, and nearly all are made by their feathers or bills. A woodpecker's territorial drumming is a familiar example. The bird raps its bill briskly against the most resonant nearby object, which is sometimes the metal vent pipe on your roof. The male Wilson's snipe creates a magical flute-like sound in flight, fluttering its wings to direct the flow of air over outspread tail feathers. Listen to this American crow. It makes this clattering sound by rattling the edges of its bill together. And an American bittern's comical burps are, well, burps, made by swallowing air and then releasing it. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
In a few short days, fireworks will be exploding over Juneau as we join together in our annual Independence Day festivities. Good day, this is Dwayne Corbin, and I am delighted to be here in Juneau as the guest conductor for the Taku Winds Pops concert. I invite you and your family to join me for an evening of historical and contemporary American-themed music, marches, and much more. Be there Saturday, July 1st, 7 o'clock p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. Tickets available at the usual outlets.
So much going on this weekend and next week for 4th of July. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I am your host, Shelley Delaney. And for our next segment, we're going to play a piece from Curious Juno. It's a new news feature from KTOO news staff. This one is about Franklin Street, which I felt is appropriate considering we'll be hanging out there a little bit next week.
Mm-hmm. One Street in Juneau is a popular locale for residents and tourists alike. South Franklin Street, particularly, is home to several bars, shops, and a rich history, but one resident wondered how it got its name. For many, Franklin is iconic, but where the street gets its name is a bit of a mystery.
I walk up and down it every day. It's the heart of the historic district.
That's Allison Eddins. She moved to Juneau 2.5 years ago and works as a city planner.
As far as I know, it's been called Franklin Street since the city was founded. I just think it's one of those iconic Juneau streets that everybody knows about.
You might recognize Eddins' voice from a previous Curious Juneau. She was our tipster on the Sometimes Strip shows at the Viking.
I feel like I know a fair amount about Juneau's history, but where some of these streets got their names has always been a little bit of a mystery to me. So I just thought it would be a good question to pose to you guys, specifically Franklin Street.
We asked Jody DeBrien, curator of collections and exhibits for the Juneau Douglas City Museum.
So Franklin Street was named for Howard Franklin. He was the chairman of a committee appointed at the miners' meeting on March 21, 1881, to lay out the city streets and lots.
Franklin first appears in Juneau records on February 24, 1881, when he and five other men staked a group of placer claims on the Specimen Gulch in the Gold Creek Valley. Franklin the Man came to Juneau from British Columbia and engaged in mining in the Silver Bow Basin for several years. According to Robert D. Armand's book, The Founding of Juneau, J.M. Cooper and Frank McMahon were also named to the committee. That committee laid out Main, Seward, and Franklin Streets, the cross streets, and established the blocks at 200 square feet. The Franklin Street name first appeared in local records on April 4, 1881.
He later went to the interior, and he was reported to have been the first man to discover gold in the 40-mile country where the Franklin Gulch is also named for him.
It's a mystery why Franklin's name was chosen for one of the streets and not one of the other men. DeBrien says that downtown Juneau then would have looked vastly different from today. Front and Franklin Streets bordered the waterfront. Today, that area has been filled in and built upon. But in 1881, one property owner almost derailed the committee's plans for plotting out downtown Juneau.
When they were looking at lots and things, a man named N.A. Fuller's lot was squarely in what was become Franklin Street at its present intersection with Front Street and refused to vacate. As a result, that portion of Franklin was not cut through to the waterfront until the mid-1890s. The last five lots were along what is now South Franklin.
Franklin almost ended at Front Street because of one guy.
So it wasn't until, you know, a few years after Franklin Street got named that it actually reached all the way down to the waterfront because somebody refused to give up his spot.
Fuller wasn't just some guy, though. According to the State of Alaska Guide, Fuller was from Sitka, and in spring 1880, he urged Joe Juneau and Richard Harris to investigate a prospect around what is now known as Gold Creek. Those miners, of course, went on to found Harrisburg, which was later renamed Juneau. Franklin Street's past is just as storied.
It was the prostitution district in Juneau. I think probably most people know that, but it's one of those kind of fun facts that, you know, right there where the cruise ships dock and we greet people with jewelry stores today was a different kind of greeting back in the day.
According to the Dawson Daily News, Franklin died of heart failure in 1904. He was 65. Franklin was buried in Dawson, Yukon. Two buildings along South Franklin Street are on the National Register of Historic Places, the Alaskan Hotel and the Alaskan Steam Laundry Building. Our next question takes us about a half mile northwest, up the hill. Another question asker pondered the origins of another somewhat famous street, Calhoun Avenue. He wanted to know whether the street was named after a local family or whether it was named after John C. Calhoun, the statesman and political theorist in the early 1800s. Juneau's Calhoun Avenue is named after a different Calhoun altogether. DeBrien helped me dig into the street's history. The road was a narrow cart track carved out of the steep western slope of Bonanza Ridge, according to a 2016 article published by the Juneau Empire. The road originally provided a footpath from nearby cabins and houses built along the hillside. It gave early residents easy access to the Evergreen Cemetery.
It was renamed for Mrs. Mary V. Calhoun, an early resident of the area. Her and her husband John arrived in Juneau from Wisconsin in 1888, and they established a dairy that was on Calhoun Avenue, right around where the governor's mansion is.
Their cows grazed along Gold Creek, the south bank of which was sometimes called Calhoun Flats.
They were there until about 1902 when they moved south and sold their dairy. There's not much that I could find on either Mary or John, but one of the references that I found said that she was so well-liked that they renamed the street for her.
John died in Seattle in 1906. Mary died in Nanaimo, British Columbia, in 1912. In Juneau, I'm Tripp Krause.
It's about 9 minutes to the top of the hour. You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is Nancy DeCherney. She's going to give us the art news on our favorite segment, Arts Up.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Well, it's a beautiful day out there, and it's going to be
sure
a beautiful 4th of July, and that's the weekend that we've got coming up here. Today, of course, there's the Wickersham Tours. The House of Wickersham does free tours Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 10 until 5. And if you've never been up to that house, it's worth a visit. It's real part of the history of Juneau and fun thing that you can do with folks that you've got visiting. And also the same with the historic downtown walking tours that the City Museum does. They do them different days from 1:30 to 3, and you end up with cookies, as I recall, which I think is always a good plus thing. From 4 to 6:30 today, it's the Soil and Salt Marketplace at the Hook Seafood Place. This is a thing where you can go online and order seafood and produce and all sorts of stuff. There's a website called saltandsoilmarketplace.com. And you can you place your order Friday at noon to Tuesday at midnight, and then you come pick up your order out at Hook Seafood. So it's really a cool thing.
That is pretty cool. I never heard of that. I learned so much hosting this show.
Well, it's kind of new, and I hope they really do a great job. They've had some great stuff on it, and trying to encourage local foraging, local produce, local people doing creative things. So we're in favor of that. Anyway, let's see. From 6 to 7 tonight, out at the Mendenhall Public Library, there is a children's book author, a Newbery Award-winning author, Lynn Ray Perkins. She has done different books like Crisscross and Easy as Falling Off the Face of the Earth and Frank and Lucky Get Schooled, so you can just go out and meet with her and learn about her books and how all of that's quirky and fun, is what it says. As you've talked about the Treadwell Gold that runs through this weekend, and I went to see it, and I highly recommend it. And I also highly recommend getting your tickets in advance.
I see. So they're having a pretty good turnout for that
I think so. And then the day that I went, there was a line out the door. So with people that didn't remember to get their tickets, so it's just easier if you get them ahead of time.
It sounds like a neat play, and it's a very short run, so don't wait. Get your tickets.
This is your opportunity. And the same thing is going with running with Pretty Sharp Things that's running now. And, of course, Aaron, this is something I guess Aaron wrote, and it's looking forward to seeing that myself. Tomorrow night, Friday night, it's a Rock Around the Block party. It's going to be it starts at 5 and goes till 7. We have the Juneau Marching Band performing and the Pride Chorus is singing. It's a county fair theme, so I think Pucker Wilson's planning to make funnel cakes and Happy Camper's going to have grilled corn or something like that. We'll have games. There'll be all a variety of vendors and such there. And because it looks like it's going to rain, there'll be a beer garden. We're going to have it in the Jack, probably. We've just sort of given up on some.
Don't say that.
It'll just turn out to be lovely because I said that, okay?
Yeah.
Friday, before that, from 4 to 5, is Mo Longworth's play Blue Ticket, Ferries Out of Alaska. They did a reading of that last night at the Jack, and it's free, and you can come. It'll be over at the Slam, so go check that out on Friday afternoon. As I mentioned, the Rock Around the Block parties. And then when you get done rocking around the block, so you can go on over to the Friday Night Live at the Alaska Fish and Chips Company on the flight deck. There'll be live music and cornhole, rain or shine.
Excellent.
So there's that. I don't know who the music is this time. So, and then, of course, you could go see either of the two plays. On Saturday, 9 a.m., it's the Eagle Crest Road and Mountain Run. Starts at 9 a.m., about half mile up the Fish Creek Road. And let's see, there's some, you can get some information on our website. There's three options. You can do the mountain only, the road and mountain, all this sort of stuff. I don't run, so.
Which one, do you know which one is easier?
Yeah, the one where I stay home and have coffee in the morning.
I don't cheer from the sidelines.
No, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's anyway, you can go onto our website to the calendar and get all the contact information about it. Also from 10 till 4 at the Canvas, Lindsay Karen, who's an artist that's been here, she's back in town, and she does figure drawing in ink, and she's teaching a class at the Canvas. Should be really a wonderful opportunity. The Moose Lodge is having a flea market, one of those things where you sell things out of the tailgate and or have a trunk or tent. You can just come and show up, and it's $20 a space. That runs from 10 till 4. And head on out and find out what you can find. Flea markets are always fun. You never know. And from 4:45 to 8, there's the Every Other Saturday Drawing Group at the Canvas. This is a three-hour drawing group. The cost is $20, and it sets up at 4:45, and the doors close at 5. So no late arrivals. Show up on time.
Do they draw from a figure, like a model?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
And that may be why the doors are closed. At 7 p.m., Taku Winds, 4th of July concert. Dwayne Corbin is going to be here. It's going to be at Thunder Mountain. It's a celebration of July, 4th of July music, patriotic music, all sorts of stuff. A saxophone solo by Todd Hunt. It's going to be a wonderful concert, so get in the spirit with that. You can also see the plays. Again, there's Cornhole Saturdays from 6 to 10 at the Alaska Fish and Chips Company at the flight deck. Stop in there and see the. You can also see the play again. House of Wickersham on Sunday. Ultimate Frisbee on Sunday from 3 to 5 out at Thunder Mountain High School. And the Treadwell Gold and Running with Pretty Sharp Things have their matinees on Sunday. On Monday, it's the 4th of July night, so I think you're going to be covering that tomorrow, all the things to do so your pets
tomorrow,
don't freak out.
And Monday, we'll have a Juno
opinion
on Monday.
And
then,
Monday.
Yeah, no, tomorrow we're going to talk about the serious stuff and
so,
maybe the fun stuff on Monday.
4th of July, the fireworks begin at 11:59 Monday night, so
yes.
We do all that. There is a from 12 to 1, Melting the Ice Curtain at the Juneau Public Library, author David Ramser's presentation and book signing, celebrating the 150th anniversary of the purchase of Alaska. David was here for many years, and it would be great to see him and stop in at the library. Let's see, on 4th of July, of course, we're having a Flapjacks, pancakes, 8:45. Stop in at the Jack and start your parade day. The parade starts at 11. You'll be on the lawn. Perfect place to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, see you there.
Excellent. Well,
thank you
so much, Nancy.
Sure.
Really appreciate that.
Happy 4th.
Yes, happy 4th to you, too. Thanks for tuning in today. Our guests were Dave Klein, Marcia Squire, Sue Baxter, and Nancy DeCherney. And on tomorrow's show, we're going to talk about fireworks safety, what to do with fireworks. If your pets are anxious, the Juno Roller Girls are going to be here. And Sarah McNair-Grove will update us on Juno Symphony activities. This has been a Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Have a great Juno evening.